It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Bonnie Hughes saw a ghost at the Whipple Company store.
We think it's the apparition of a woman. The way she comes out from the wall and turns to look at us, it's like she's letting us know she's here. And then she's gone.
She might have been looking for ghosts, but what she found was a disturbing story instead. The conclusion of The Soul of a Company Store on this West Virginia morning. A new study claims that America does not have 200 years of mining left. The study, released yesterday, found mineable coal will run out much sooner than expected. The report comes from a Colorado-based environmental organization that works to push the transition from fossil fuels to other energy sources called Clean Energy Action. Jessica Lilly spoke with the author of the report called Warning, Faulty Reporting of U.S. Coal Reserves, Leslie Glustrom.
What are your general findings from this report?
The concept is that while the United States has a lot of coal, most of the coal in the United States is buried too deeply or is otherwise inaccessible and can't be mined at a price where it can then be sold at a profit.
One report that you've cited in this study is one from the federal government, the Energy Information Agency, and one that here in West Virginia, I know we're pretty familiar with the phrase that we have 200 more years of coal, but you found issues with that. Tell us about that.
What the EIA has called reserves of coal aren't really reserves. And in the report, we show you where on the EIA website they have acknowledged that that isn't the case. What they're calling reserves should really be called resources.
Whatever reason, financial cost, geology for coal essentially running out, as you mentioned in your report, isn't this sort of what the environmentalists wanted in the first place in searching for cleaner energy?
You don't have to believe me, but I would ask that everyone who cares about the future of your family, your county, your state, and of our country take a hard look at the references and at the data and then take a hard look at what that means for the future of areas that are dependent on coal mining.
One piece of data that I noticed in your report says that there is a peak production in 2008. We've seen the boom and bust of the coal industry here in West Virginia, and I'm sure other mining states are the same. Why is this any different?
West Virginia's apparent peaked in coal production in 1947, a couple years after World War II. About 176 million tons of coal produced in 1947 from West Virginia. You were the powerhouse of the country at the time, the number one coal-producing state. The coal mines, of course, don't fill back up, and after you've mined the easily accessible stuff, you have to keep turning to the more difficult-to-mine coal. And in 2012, West Virginia produced about 120 million tons, so coal production in West Virginia was down about 30% below the peak. The chances that West Virginia could recoup that loss, that there's some set of coal seams in West Virginia, that if we just had a different president or different regulations or no EPA, that you could go out and mine that coal at a profit, is highly unlikely. I can't even begin to think where that coal would come from. And the problem is that the easily accessible coal has been mined. The coal that remains is much harder to access. When it's harder to access, it's more expensive to produce. When it's more expensive to produce, the coal companies can't produce it at a price they can sell it at a profit. And when they can't sell it at a profit, they won't mine very much. And that's when coal mines get closed. So, yes, there are always ups and downs, but a careful look at the numbers, not just at political statements or, frankly, even just media accounts, but looking at these numbers, looking up these reports, and then looking up the footnotes, I think helps everyone get a better sense of what's actually happening around coal mining. And it's only when we move beyond blaming someone else that we can begin to solve our problems. So thank you for that question.
Leslie Glustrom with Clean Energy Action Group. Leslie, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Jessica, and my best wishes to everyone.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:35. The National Weather Service has issued a wind advisory from 6 o'clock tonight until 7 o'clock tomorrow morning for the eastern mountains. That include McDowell, Wyoming, Raleigh, Fayette, Nicholas, Webster, Pocahontas, and Randolph counties. Wind gusts could reach up to 50 miles per hour tonight. There's dense fog this morning, mostly cloudy skies today with a chance of rain this afternoon. It'll be warmer with temperatures in the 60s and 70s. Rain and thunderstorms tonight could be windy. It'll be cooler. Overnight lows in the 40s and 50s. Wind gusts of between 15 to 30 miles per hour or more. Mostly cloudy on Friday with a chance of rain. A little cooler tomorrow with temperatures in the 50s and 60s.
Support provided by the West Virginia Hospital Association. The new healthcare insurance marketplace provides a variety of choices, coverage options, and enrollment information available at healthcare.gov or 1-800-318-2596.
Today is All Hallows' Eve, or Halloween, which traces its roots to Gaelic culture, when it was believed on this day the boundaries between the living and dead overlap. It's also a great day to read a ghost story, which is why Berkeley Springs writer John Douglas made sure his new book, A Fog of Ghosts, Haunted Tales and Odd Pieces, was published this month. Douglas recently sat down with Cecilia Mason to talk about the book.
What made you decide to put the ghost story book together?
I started writing ghost stories back in the mid-1970s when I started working for the Morgan Messenger newspaper. And every Halloween, I would put in a ghost story, and people loved them. The years I didn't do it, they asked where it was. And sometimes I would make them up. Sometimes I made them up the night before they were in print. And sometimes I used local legends or stories that people told me about their own haunted house. And so I decided when I retired that I'd tried to collect all these things, and I decided to put out the book of ghost stories.
So this is a compilation of some of the stories that you already ran in the Messenger, or are they new, or both?
They're both. There's probably a dozen stories in here that were from the Morgan Messenger in the past, and then several new ones. Then there's a middle section that's about an unsolved murder from 1950 called the Redhead Murder Saga. And then there's an autobiographical section about why I got interested in ghost stories and some of the ghost stories I tried to track down as a reporter. And then it ends with a Civil War story, sort of an odd Civil War story that I wrote years ago.
Do you have a favorite story in the book?
I'm sort of partial to the last story. It's called Find Virginia Line, about a man who returns to his childhood home after wandering the world, and it's in a valley in West Virginia. It's fictionally called Clinton Valley, though it's a lot like Doe Gully. And he just remembers an anecdote from his family's past where his great-great-grandfather tried to stop a Civil War battle in the middle of their cornfield. And I'm sort of partial to that. And then there's a story that's also about the Civil War. That's one of the ghost stories. It's a girl named Maggie Rose, Magdalene Rose. And Maggie Rose had this thing about Stonewall Jackson. It was set in 1862. And she wanted to see Stonewall Jackson when he was leading his forces from Winchester, Virginia, through West Virginia, up to Hancock, Maryland. And so she hid by in the stream, Sleepy Creek, and she tried to get a glimpse of Stonewall Jackson as he went by. The trouble was, the soldiers were making so much noise, and there's cannons going by, and people riding by, and people marching by, and one of the soldiers thought he saw a rabbit. So unfortunately, Maggie Rose was the rabbit. And so as she lay dying, the troops are going by, and she's calling for help, and nobody stops. And so in the story, if you go out the Route 13, the old Winchester Road, and get to that bridge, sometimes you can hear this faint voice calling for help.
Is this a true ghost story or something you just decided would be interesting?
Well, the history of it's true. That's the way Stonewall Jackson went from Winchester to Hancock in 1862. The rest of it, my wife and I made up as we were driving out there one night and thought we heard a whistle as we went by the bridge. And it's funny, there's a Michigan college professor who was doing a Stonewall Jackson tour. And so he was doing some legwork in this area to figure out where he was going to take his people. He called me up a couple years after the story was in the paper. It was one of my Halloween ghost stories. And he said, you know, all the old people out there on Winchester Grade Road tell me about this old story that, you know, about the girl being shot who wanted a glimpse of Stonewall Jackson. And I just had to laugh. He wanted to know the exact location so they could stop there on these historical bus tour. And I did tell him that it was something that, far from being old, was only about 2 years old at the time.
That has to be fun, though.
Yes, that's fun. Yeah.
Now, do you believe in ghosts yourself?
I think there's things we can't explain, but I don't know that I believe in ghosts. I think people's minds play, I wouldn't say they play tricks, but, you know, we carry things around in our mind and we superimpose our own minds on the places we are.
John Douglas, thanks for talking with us about your book.
Thank you.
That's John Douglas, author of A Fog of Ghosts, Haunted Tales, and Odd Pieces. This Halloween morning, we conclude a three-part story about the haunted history of the Whipple Company store in Fayette County. The spooky stories told there go beyond typical ghost tales and towards a horror that bleeds into reality. So far, we've heard two stories that point to forced sexual servitude on the part of women who lived in the coal camps around Whipple. Esau scrip was allegedly issued to women whose husbands were out of work, a kind of loan in which the women's very bodies were the collateral. We also heard about a room in the store where women were supposedly forced to trade sexual favors for new pairs of shoes. Some historians are skeptical, citing, among other concerns, a lack of written documentation. Others say these stories have been buried, but are far from dead. Producer Catherine Moore visited the store one night with paranormal investigators and several other locals with ties to its history. The story picks up in an upstairs room known as Ellie's Room, after a spirit that's said to live there. Two ghost hunters speak of what they found there one night.
When Jane Skeldon first entered the room, she started to cry. She and her partner, Bonnie Hughes, were drawn to the powerful emotions there. So they got to work.
Bonnie, take the camera down right here. We get what in the paranormal world is called the Holy Grail, a full body apparition. This was a really tall figure, literally comes out of the wall.
Now, I've seen the video, and it totally made my skin crawl. Here's Jane again.
And my brother, who works for a television station, has put this video on his big equipment. And when he ran it backwards just to do it again, it disappears. So, in other words, it doesn't behave in a normal shadow or video kind of way.
So what do you think it is?
I don't know what it is.
That's Bonnie.
We think it's the apparition of a woman. The way she comes out from the wall and turns to look at us, it's like she's letting us know she's here, and then she's gone.
She presents herself to us like, okay, I'm going to trust you all.
I feel it's self-explanatory.
That's Cora Sue Barrett. She grew up right down the road.
I really feel these entities, as we are calling them, are reaching out. I'm really feeling this. Not so much the coal barons, but what we used to call the little people, the forgotten people.
Cora Sue's convinced that these are real people who are trying to bring closure to their past. At Whipple, the past itself is unsettled. Right now, the stories of Esau scrip and of women who traded sex acts for new shoes, they're caught in limbo. These are brutal stories, and they cry out. But then you have historians who say, where's the proof? Historians probe the past based on what they can see and verify. But history as it's told at the Whipple Company store is much harder to see. Like the apparition in the video, there's something there. But what?
People behave based on their emotions.
That's Wes Harris, a frequent visitor to the store who studies West Virginia's labor history. As the tour winds up, we go out onto the porch. We talk about what happened that night.
And the intensity of feelings that have come out of this building are magnifying when I take the stories out of this building onto Main Street. They're horrible stories, they're anger stories, they're sad stories. And notably among the women as well as the men. And the people I tell them to respond, I'm angry, or I'm sad, or I'm ticked off. That doesn't happen when you read a textbook. To me, that's incredibly important because I've certainly got a background as in the academic realm, but I've also got a background as an organizer. And it's the spirit of those who have gone before us that if we don't have it, we don't go forward. People are responding, and they're wanting to see these stories saved, this building saved, and they want it for their kids. And so that's why I keep coming back to this building, is it's getting me in the gut, and it's getting other people in the gut, and if you want to have a better life for your kids and grandkids, that's where you got to get folks. Who will be the one who
will decide? On that last point, at least, historian Dr. Paul Rakes can agree. True location.
Oral history has its value, obviously. It reminds a culture of difficult times, and it reminds youngsters in particular of what the generations before had to endure for them to have the better situation they have at a given time. It actually enables folks to make the point more clearly.
The point being, in this case, of course, oppression. It's a point that hasn't been lost on Corasu.
What is the old word? It behooves me to know such tragedies happen and there's never been closure on it, and that the coal barons really got away with a lot of stuff. They lined pockets, just like they do today, you know. The miners worked and died so they could have and enjoy. So I think justice needs to come forth. How can you not question and say, there is really something to this? And I don't know that there's quote-unquote hauntings. I just think there's something there for us to learn, to study, and to know about.
And that statement, that very, very vague statement, is ultimately where we settle. How can you not question? There is something to this. I've come to view Whipple, the building, as a mirror for how we see our past. Like most sites of historical importance, it's full of numerous and sometimes conflicting significances. And it's haunted by questions, crying out for investigation. And so I call on you, dear listener, to become a part of that history. Visit for yourself. Listen, question, reflect. If these stories are alive in your family, come forward and tell them. And if you're a historian, look further. Consider alternatives. After all, even scientists will agree that just because you can't see a thing doesn't mean it's not there. For West Virginia Public Radio, this is Catherine Moore reporting from the gaping mouth of Whipple Company store in Fayette County, West Virginia. Special thanks today to the Whipple Company store and museum, Teresa Burris, Bill Kovarik, Michael Klein, Sam Petzonk, and Cyrus Foreman.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.